Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
What's going on, Podcast Land? Welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast. My name is John O'Connor. Like always, I'm with Daniel Tao. And today marks the quarter century episode number 75. And what a better way to do it than with Jimmy Fasulo. He is the lead singer of two NJ bands, Chasing Down Sunset and Ernston. We talk about, in this order, Metallica, Getting Sober, and then his two bands. It was an odd conversation, but it was also fun. So definitely check that out. Keep your ears listening. I mean, then again, what else do ears do? But anyways, thank you so much for the love we're receiving on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on YouTube. We're feeling the love. You know, one love. I think that's what Bob Marley said. I don't know. I never listened to Bob Marley. I think he was highly overrated. Yeah, I said it. I think Bob Marley was overrated. But what does that have to do with the Behind the Barricade podcast? Nothing. What can you do for the Behind the Barricade podcast? Everything. For starters, you could go on iTunes. You could hit that subscribe button. Give us a nice 5-star rating. Maybe a nice review of what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. What are your feelings about Bob Marley? I don't care what you write, because it helps with the iTunes algorithm. I keep trying to tell you people that over and over again. And yeah, you do listen, so thank you for that. anything else, Daniel? Nope, nothing on his end, because he's a mute when it comes to this. It's quite odd and kind of scary, too. But anyways, let's get right into it. Episode 75, Jimmy Fasulo. Start right now.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Brought to you by Skype.
Jesus.
How's it going?
Doing all right. What's happening with you? Where are you calling from?
I'm in my basement right now, where I spend most of my time, in Sayreville, New Jersey. Bunghole of the universe.
The home of Starland Ballroom.
Yeah, that's the one thing we got going for us, at least.
And somewhat or another Bon Jovi, which I don't think he ever talked about being from Sayreville. But
The tagline on the Ernston Facebook page is literally "Redeeming Sayreville for Bon Jovi, one punk rock song at a time."
Oh, what the fuck is wrong with Bon Jovi?
It's not the music of Bon Jovi; it's the idea of Bon Jovi.
Oh,
just
like
everything
the
about Bon Jovi. He somehow found a way to make hair metal and glam rock more commercial and terrible than it already was. Which is somewhat commendable, because that's a feat and a half right there. But,
He basically took the heavy metal out of hair metal bands.
Yeah,
like there was one time where Motley Crue was considered a heavy metal band.
Yeah, like Dr. Feelgood, when they're starting to get big, but it's still just girthy. You know what I mean? It's riffy. He took the riffs out and replaced it for synths and like. What is that? What is that called? Is that like a syncopator? The wow, 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 wow.
Not sure.
I guess the wah pedal?
Yeah, some kind of wah.
Yeah, vocal wah?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
as in, why are you doing this?
The funny thing I hear all the time is, like, people that listen to, like, bands like Bon Jovi, like, older people, not even older people, anybody that listens to that, like, Iron Maiden, and then they're, like, all fucking Disturbed. They're not metal. It's like, dude, you listen to one band that was considered, like, heavy metal back in the day, which is now, like,
yeah,
soft kind of hard rock, and then you're calling Disturbed, like, oh. I mean, like, pussy, like, metal.
Yeah.
You know? You can't, I mean, I know one's an oldie and one, you know, one's a newer band, but, I mean, they're still, you know, differentiating, like, styles of heaviness.
But. Yeah, I see, like, Disturbed, I really, that one of the first heavy albums that I bought, well, I bought, like, Shadows Fall, just because fucking Shadows Fall.
Yeah,
and then I bought, when Skeleton Witch put out Beyond the Permafrost, I literally rode my scooter 6 miles to Best Buy to buy it. And then 6 miles back to I was in, like, seventh grade, and it was without permission. But I bought Indestructible at Walmart, and I thought it was tight. Like, the whole, like, it was almost like big beat. Like, the rhythms they use in that nu metal stuff where it's just, like, really rhythm-driven. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, maybe the – what's his name? David Draiman? Is that the singer's name of Disturbed,
I
think?
Yeah, he's Draiman, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's, like – he's just like heavy metal scatting essentially at some parts, which I guess could turn some people off. But like that compared to Merry-Go-Round by Motley Crue, case in point, literally just Vince Neil grabbing his balls as tight as he can and screaming Merry-Go-Round and Round for a 6 minute track. But Disturbed is where you draw the line. Come on, dude.
Yeah. I hate that. I totally do. But it's just, I think it's more of like opinion. Like, if you hate Disturbed, you're going to make fun of it and say it's not metal, comparing it to Slayer. But you listen to Iron Maiden because it's cooler to listen to Iron Maiden because it's an oldie, you know? You can get by listening to something that's not as heavy and the singer sounds like a girl because it's, you know, it's Iron Maiden. And not saying that he's a bad singer. I like their style, but if you're comparing it to vocals nowadays, people would be like, he sounds like a girl. I hate this.
It's so weird. I feel like metal is the only, like, subculture where you see that happening. Like, rock and roll, you're not going to have someone who's, like, a Chuck Berry purist. Like, oh, bro, oh, I fucking hate the Black Keys. It's too much guitar. Like, or, like, their tone is not the same as it was 20 years ago. Like, I feel like metal is the only place where we start seeing people, like, kind of dividing themselves based on different types of the same idea in music, and I really don't, I don't understand it. It doesn't make that much sense to me, because I feel like metal, at least, is, like, one of the sub, because punk's dead, we all know that. Metal's the only thing going that's still, like, it's still doing something that will not be mainstream. Like, it's the real rebel music that's left, because, like, you guys just had Lorna Shore on, they're Jersey boys, they're tight as hell. Like, you're not gonna have, Lorna Shore is not going to have a crossover album that winds up in the top 40. Mm-hmm. Like the Sex Pistols, Johnny Rotten left the Sex Pistols and then had the label build a post-punk band for him. Like, metal is the only thing that's still kind of, as far from its roots as it has gotten, it's the only thing that at heart still does what it came to do, which is drive music forward and bring people together and rebel against, you know, whatever it is we're being, you know, the Bon Jovi shit.
Yeah.
But it's also the most divided group of fans that I think I've ever been a part of, let alone played in the scene of.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Lorna Shore, like a, you know, deathcore, death metal, whatever the fuck you want to call them, band.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, they'll never have like a top 40 hit or you never have that crossover album. But then you look at a band like Bring Me the Horizon, which basically did the exact same thing.
That's
just what you just said.
Yeah, I can't understand. I'm like, oh, I love this, you know, Sepaternal. That album's awesome, but I can't get myself to listen to their older stuff. It's just not my type of metal.
I feel that too. When I was going through, like when Bring Me the Horizon first came on the scene, I was in probably like eighth grade, and that was the year. Like, I went to my first show outside of New Jersey, let alone just by myself. I saw the fucking Evisceration Plague tour with Hatebreed, Cannibal Corpse, Born of Osiris, Unearth, Hate Eternal, there was one more band. Was there another band? No, there wasn't another band. But I remember it so vividly. It was I was like 13, and it was my first time in a pit, and it was Nokia, Best Buy Theater now, Nokia Theater at the time in Manhattan. And I just saw, like, these big dudes punching each other in the face, and I was like, this is so badass.
Actually, it's the PlayStation Theater now. I mean, you have the evolutions of capitalism here.
Yeah. Literally. Hey, it is closing at the Times Square. It is susceptible to the mecca that is the bourgeoisie capitalization on the human experience.
Now we're getting a little too technical in the vocabulary.
Now, but I mean, like, you're exactly right. Every time someone, even the last episode I just did yesterday, where we just put it up today with, holy fuck, I just blanked out. Teddy from, in a metalcore band from Chicago called Tanzan. And he was talking, we were talking about, like, Chicago, where he was from. And he's like, yeah, I've never been to, like, your neck of the woods. He's like, what's there to do? I'm like, well, look, you should spend 30 minutes in Times Square and you should never visit it again.
Yeah.
That's basically all you need. That's why I keep telling people, like, I know, because if you go there, there's nothing except a bunch of aggravation, a bunch of Eastern Europeans just, like, pushing you out of the way just to get a fucking picture. You know, it's literally the mecca of getting your pickpocketed.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's the, like, it's so weird because New York has kind of progressed into, like, the way that I've always looked at it. I kind of, like, have this tendency to overanalyze everything a lot. Is like there were the two arts communities that were burgeoning in the 80s and the late 70s, where you had, you know, the movement in the East Village, being like pushing forward with like the Velvet Underground stuff, all of the art rock, and then they grew up together, but pretty much on opposite sides of the spectrum. You had hip hop, which was coming and just both innovating and creative, and I feel like what happened was after the Warhol era ended and it transitioned into the whole club kid movement, and art just progressed on that side of the city. It progressed to be more capitalist. And I think that, like, just more commercially accessible, I feel like that's what kind of opened New York and, like, brought it away from being just, like, the dingy, like, mecca that it was into, like, you know, utopia. And then, but we still have now the side that didn't progress, well, not progress, but cross over into a completely commercialized scene. Yeah. It's kind of like it's being pushed out by the scene that was alongside it, you know, with gentrification's coming in, just pushing everyone out of these areas. And we're going to lose a lot of the creativity, I feel like. And I feel like it's a testament to that, like ASAP Mob, they're all incredibly, like, they're geniuses. They're brilliant designers, brilliant rappers. They can formulate sentences and articulate them that on surface seem so just blanket, but then you look at it and you're like, wow, these guys are really clever, and like they're saying some really cool things.
Exactly.
But like ASAP Ferg, his dad was a designer and a millionaire. Ferg grew up, I mean, I don't know the guy personally, so I don't want to just like bash, like, oh yeah, Ferg's not street, because I don't know shit, but like, you know what I mean? It's like everybody has a story that's not as storied as I feel like a lot of people coming up. And that's happened with the city at large, I feel like, too. It's become a lot more clean cut and just, like, all of the edge and all the attractiveness of Manhattan and just the New York area, I think, is gone. Like, I feel like even kids, like, 5 years older than me, their parents would say, oh, you got to be careful when you go to the city, you know, watch your back at all times. But, like, my parents say that to me, and I'm like, for what? Like, just put your wallet in your front pocket, and that's all you have to worry.
Yeah,
dude,
basically.
I've never had any problems, and I go all the time.
It's almost disappointing, right?
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yeah.
Not that I want to get the shit kicked out of me by any means, but, like, if I'm going, like, the amount of times that I've walked through Chelsea and have not seen, like, one remnant of just shitty drug use at all just, like, blows my mind thinking back historically.
Yeah, you just want basically, you know, Rent the Musical, but in real life, where, like, everyone has issues, everyone has problems, you see, like, shit on the street, you know. You want to go back to the days where it was, like, in the 80s, where you had nothing but fucking porno booths, porno theaters, you know, strippers, you had fucking prostitutes in Times Square. You want that shit that made New York, New York. Like, if you think about, like, the Ramones coming up today, or, like, the Talking Heads coming up today, or fucking Velvet Underground coming up today, do you honestly think they would have such an impact?
No, not at all. And I think that's a lot of it is why, you know, a lot of the shit that's coming up now that's getting popular, like the Wonder Years and all that stuff, it's just about, like the weird disillusionment that like, you know, like suburban kids, like we're on the outskirts of the city that we hear and read all this shit about. But like, you know, I'm 20 years old. I've lived like no amount of life yet. Like, but I don't know anywhere I could go that for a weekend I could just be like, oh, fuck, yeah, I'm not the suburban kid anymore. Like, I go there to try to escape, and, like, I've walked around the village, just, like, looked at shit, like, gone to random just places because I'm like, oh, maybe I can meet some people here who think the way I do and stuff. Like, just talk about this random obscure shit that if I even say that I like it anywhere else, people are like, oh, okay, say something else that's obnoxious, Jimmy. Yeah. But, like... there's nothing, and I feel like a lot of it, there's a sense of isolation now in the suburbs that I don't think was here before, at least watching movies, because I feel nostalgic all the time for stuff that I never lived through. Like, there's no kids. I don't know how much time you guys spend in, like, the Jersey side of the burbs, but there's no kids out playing at all, ever. Like, literally ever. In the summer, I think I saw, like, 3 bicycles, and they were chained to fences. And it, like, unless you go out of your way to find someone to spend time with you, you're not going to spend time with anyone. And when you're spending time with them, you don't know what the fuck there is to do because nobody's doing anything.
True.
So you can just go spend money on, like, the pulp bullshit and just watch the terrible recycled book movies or action movies or remakes of semi-decent movies. Or just fuck around and make music. And I think, like, with the amount of people who are turning to it, now we're going to get a really cool wave, like a new culture, hopefully soon. But I don't. It's such a weird time, man. It's, yeah, like, the millennial thing, like, because there are kids who are straight up the millennial trash that everyone
plays. Oh, absolutely, 100%.
I know that for a fact, but it just sucks. Like, if there are artistic minds, they're either just not being, like, brought up or and nurtured, or they're just, like, they don't, like, why give a shit at this point? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's almost hard to be like, okay, yeah, I'll just go hop in a van and tour the whole summer away and come back with nothing, but at least, you know, like, I made my impact. That's not enough for a lot of people like it used to be, and that bums me out, too.
Oh, yeah, I see that all the time with bands, you know, like going out on tour to like, all right, we're going to play, to, you know, we might be playing a little bit of bars, but we're going to play it to like 200-300 people every night. We're going to make thousands of dollars coming in there. And then the first show they go out to, they're playing in front of like a fucking bartender and the sound guy. And they're like, yep, what are we doing?
Yeah, you know what? You know, I do have a scholarship. I might just do that and then get like 6 other regular jobs so I never have to deal with, you know, being sad, because that's what's going to fill the void, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I went on tour this summer with Chasing Down Sunset, and we're still in debt, but like we had a ton of fun. There were shows on that tour. Like, we played Revolution in Long Island.
Oh yeah.
And like headlining that on your first tour, like seeing your poster up between OTEP and Less Than Jake, like straight up boner food. But like, and then we played in Columbus, and we played at the this really cool spot called Cafe Kerouac.
Okay.
Which is it's a bookstore / record store / comic book store, with their main focus being that it's a coffee shop, and they also have a stage.
Okay.
So, like, it is just, like, it's, like, the most college place to ever exist other than a college. So, like, I went in, and there was just people with all these different colors of hair and shit, and, like, it felt like there was, like, you know, like, you go in to see shows now, like, if you go to Starland, and it's any type of band, basically, other than really, really niche, like the heavy stuff, yeah, or the really weird stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be people of all walks of life.
Absolutely.
Like, people there at Cafe Kerouac, it was one of the first places that I went where I was like, wow, like, not that I could say, like, oh, these people look like they're in a movement together. Like, but like, they were, like, they looked like they were a community. You know what I mean? And they, yeah, made sense to be there together. And we're a pop punk band. Everyone else at the time in the band was 16 and I was 20. And so, like, we're just these punk-ass kids from New Jersey rolling up in the middle of Ohio. And that show, we couldn't find a show in Ohio at all, so we just booked it ourselves. And, like, we had to find our own locals and literally run the show ourselves.
Jesus.
When we got to the venue. But, yeah, this cool dude, his name's Zach Bask. He books a lot up there. I mean, it's a good connect now, because next time we go up there, this won't happen. But he... he wound up helping us out and finding some locals. And that show, like, the stage was probably like 10 feet by 20 feet and only like a foot off the ground. And there was just a bunch of people just kind of standing there scattered throughout this bookstore. And we sold like two records and made like $30. But that shit, like, that show was probably just as, if not more exciting to me than it was playing Revolution. Like, I like the idea of when you go to a state, you're playing there because they allowed you to come into their home and perform for them.
Yeah, exactly.
And whether or not, yeah, whether or not you succeed from it, I feel like is an afterthought, or at least it should be, because you're being granted the opportunity. Like me, like if I was touring and I was 16, like the rest of Chasing Down Sunset, like I wouldn't be able to wrap my mind around the fact, like, this is a state that I literally have no reason for to be in at all ever in my life, probably.
Yeah.
But I'm here playing a show and people are giving a shit. Like, and that's insane. Like, as long as I have enough gas to get home, you could pay me in like peanuts. I don't care. But like, it's not, especially this day and age, man. Like, it's, everything has moved on to be 100% about making money and your future, even though everything you do to secure those things is usually just going to fall through on you. But like, it's hard. Like, if I was 5 years younger, if I was their age, like 16, I don't think that I'd give a shit enough.
Well, yeah,
and
true.
I really don't. Like, I don't know where they find it, let alone me. Like, it's just, it's weird, dude. But I think that's why everything has also moved to be more extreme. The metal bands are way more metal. The weird bands are way more weird. It's because everyone's trying to find the new way to go because it's all just gone stale.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
So I'm excited about the future, but New York isn't going to be a part of it, I don't think, unfortunately, to tie that all back together somehow.
No, I do hear you there, but, you know, people have to understand that, you know, great things don't happen overnight. Like, we are, we evolved into this society where we want shit now. If we don't get it now,
yes,
we're going to keep doing something.
Exactly.
We're going to keep doing something else until we find, you know, this instant gratification of, holy shit, look what I did. Ha 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 ha. Now you're following in my footsteps. You know?
Yeah. That's the thing. Now, like, this is such a unique time in history for people who want to create, because it's not like a wave just ended and we're evolving from it. I feel like the early 2000s was like the last giant era of music where you had like the emo and the emo pop scenes. And then we had metal came up for like 2010 to 2013 was just Starland every day was a metal band.
Oh, yes.
Every day.
Yep.
It was everywhere. Like, the scene was metal. But now it's kind of just like this void of, okay, well, the indie bands are all on Z100 now. The metal bands, like Bring Me the Horizon, I wasn't into it, but like, they were metal as fuck. Like, for the middle school kids, like, a dude screaming about whores, like, as cheesy as it is in retrospect, it's pretty fucking badass.
Oh, absolutely.
But
yeah.
Like, everyone's going so far in every direction because I don't think anyone can figure out what to make next, because so much has been done. And so, like, we can just look back at all of these great points in time. So we're all focused on the whole, like, legacy of your art and, you know, what it will mean 20 years from now. But nobody wants to work for 20 years and then wait another 20 to look back on it.
Yeah.
Like, there's bands that'll put out 3 albums, be like, okay, well, we got a little bit of attention on this. I don't think anyone's going to remember it, so I'm just going to scrap this and then start a band that's closer to what's getting popular. Right.
Exactly.
Now. Like, it's so lame. Ah, everything bums me out, dude. I'm kind of a cynical asshole, in case you didn't know. I should have warned you in the emails.
We can't make it tonight, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
come up with some bullshit excuse.
Gross.
No, but I mean, I think the last truly unique thing I've seen, and this actually came out of New Jersey, I think this might have been a little bit before your time. Did you ever hear of a band called Folly?
I have heard of. I have not listened, though.
They
I think my vocal coach said something about them.
Okay.
Were they around with, like, the Ugly Club? Oof. Around that time? Or, like, else is coming up in Jersey?
This was going back to maybe 2000... 2003, 2004. So this was like the time where, you know, you had the pop punk bands, you had the screamo bands. Like everyone wanted to sound like, you know, like Fall Out Boy. Like it's around that time.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were the only bands that literally invented a genre, and it was called ska core. Meaning they had ska riffs over it, and they did hardcore, and it was brilliant.
Yes, no, I do know Folly. I guess. Shit. Wow, I remember that band. Yeah, but that's the thing too. Like, as tight as that is, it's literally just combining two distinct things. You know, like, it's so weird. It's so weird. But yeah, Folly was tight, and then like ska was, I think, also probably the last one too. That like just ska core and ska and like all the derivatives of that final wave.
Yeah,
like that's the only movement that I see, I think, is like still cohesive.
Well, I mean, like, ska, you really can't half-ass. Like, I mean, you could have all the players, but if you sound like shit, you know, you sound like shit, you can't fucking hide that. But, like, everything else, commit. It's like, okay, I could play a power chord here, I could play a power chord there, but, you know, you're not going to become, like, the next Streetlight Manifesto, you're not going to be the next Less Than Jake, you're not going to be the next, you know, Real Big Fish, and all these, like, big-ass bands that have been around doing this music for the last, you know, 20-something fucking years now. So
yeah, they're big because ska had like a very small window to break through in the 90s, and they happened to be there. Like we still have great ska bands in Jersey. Like Survey Says was killing it forever.
Survey
like
Says.
They were doing like
Backyard Superheroes
200 day. Back, I booked their first show ever. I was like 16, and I booked them at the South Amboy Elks Lodge.
Oh wow!
those bands are so great, but it sucks because I feel like, unless something really, really great happens to pull through for them, they'll never get the recognition they deserve. Because I feel like those bands are better. Real Big Fish, I'm not a fan of Real Big Fish. I feel like if I had the opportunity to switch Backyard Superheroes and Real Big Fish in like the musical conscious, I totally would. But like there's no other way to come up and join those bands. Just like in metal, there's no way to come up and join the level of the big four. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You got to hope that 20 years from now you'll be in the big four of whatever the fuck it is that you're playing right now.
Yeah. It's weird, and like we said before, no one these days are going to put the time in unless, you know, you were in your 30s and you're going, okay, you know, it's either this or a full-time job, and I don't want to do that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. I feel like people tend to run to or run from things a lot now, and like even if you're just doing it when you're 30 and just dropping everything and like, fuck this, I don't want a full-time job, I'm gonna tour all the time, like, more power to you, but you're still running from something, you know what I mean? I feel like nobody's just open to just making stuff and seeing what happens and putting the effort in when you believe in it.
No, I completely understand with that. I mean, that's basically what we're doing.
Like, running
we're away from yeah you guys are killing it. Like, it's so tight. I love it. Like, I feel like everyone who does something where their hobby can become part of, like, just their overall, like, oh, your name, somebody hears your name, they're like, oh, that's the guy who does this. Or, like, that's what the people you're friends with, that's what they think of when they think of you. No matter what it is, even if it's just, like, you really like making coloring books and getting them published.
We love
like,
doing that, by the way.
Like, yeah, we're fucking huge colorers.
Yo, you should definitely do like a behind the barricade coloring book, and you guys just fucking design terrible drawings of everyone on the podcast, but only phone interviews. So in your mind, it's what you think they look like.
Even though we have no access to the internet or anything.
You made me look like a douchebag.
No. Actually, that's kind
of
accurate.
Your calls from an isolated location. Do it.
If we had any artistic talent, we'd do that in a fucking heartbeat, but I can't draw for shit. Dan, what about you?
Yeah, no, I can't do stick figures.
Yeah.
I saw a thing, maybe it was a TED Talk. I think it was a TED Talk. It came up randomly on my YouTube, but it was like some guy talking, obviously, on the TED Talk thing about like everyone can draw. I guess it's like a scientific fact or some shit. That like you can develop the ability to draw. I don't know.
I didn't
watch it.
Basically saying like everyone can sing, which is technically true because you just have to work on your voice.
It's all muscle memory. Yeah.
Well, and
like
there's like a difference too. Like
do shit, but
there's a difference between knowing how to sing and having a good voice. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. You
it's
can
like
know where the notes are and how to hit them.
It's just exactly like that band Nevermore. Everyone loved the fucking music and hated the singer. I mean, he was a good singer. It's just we hated his voice, you know?
Yeah, Front Bottoms, too. I am a huge – well, I'm a huge fan of their one album. I can't really get into the rest of the stuff for some reason. I don't know why. But, like, he's singing in key. It just doesn't necessarily sound like he's singing.
Yeah, I hear you on there. There's so many bands that are like that. And it's – you know what? You can't even pinpoint it and say, okay, look, you know – this guy can't sing. It's like, clearly he can. You just don't like the voice for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people that go on the fucking American Idol and they can't sing.
Yeah.
At the time being, obviously.
Wait, do you remember Sanjaya?
Yeah, he was a fucking joke.
That shit was incredible. He was terrible, but then people just kept voting for him because it was funny.
Yeah.
I was in third grade. I don't know why the fuck. Why do I remember Sanjaya? Oh, and William Hung. Holy shit.
I was just about to mention that. I was like, William Hung had an album out.
Yeah. They gave him a record deal or something.
I remember I had KOL, Kids American Online.
Yes.
And they had a feature about William Hung's new album. And he just was talking about how grateful he was. And I think that's the first time that I ever felt like an asshole. Because I was reading that and I was like, oh my God, this guy's so sweet. Why did I say these terrible things about him? And then I clicked the preview link, and I was like, oh, that's why. But
justified.
Like, that's the thing. Like, it's almost that. Wow, American Idol. I'm about to just keep tripping off about why kids my age suck with how they approach music. But like American Idol, we think that's the thing. American Idol is that instant gratification, because even if you don't win, you're still on TV singing in front of millions of people.
Yeah,
like that's enough. That'd be enough for me to like call it a day. If I fail and I'm not like 100% committed to trying to make music, I'm just gonna be like, all right, well, fuck it, I did it. Like,
I'm sure you know the band Dream Theater, right?
Oh, of course.
They have this They did it with Lars too. I'll talk about that afterwards. But they did like this YouTube mashup where they make it seem like James LaBrie tried out for American Idol, and freaking Simon just rips on him, dude. It looks like it legit happened, dude. You gotta watch this YouTube video. It'll make you cry. It's hysterical. He's like singing some kind of like ballad song, I don't know. It sounds like some kind of like ballad Christmas song. James LaBrie is fucking singing it, and then Simon's like, you're just terrible. And then you see him, like, hang his head. Dude, it's hysterical.
There was a video like that. It was – but, like, she was actually on X Factor. It was – she called herself a holistic vocal coach, and she said that she taught Matt Tuck from Bullet for My Valentine how to scream.
Oh, shit.
And she composed this piece where she just was, like, singing about herself and then changing, like, what style she was doing. And she's, like, screaming and shit. And I thought it was badass, but Simon is sitting there with, like, not even his patented look of horror. It was a brand new one I had never seen.
Brand new. He patented it.
And that's the thing, too. Like, that's a testament to also how, you know, these alternative forms of music really are metal is the only real thing that's refusing to be accepted by people who don't want to accept it.
Yeah.
Because Simon Cowell has no interest in metal, so of course he was.
Yeah, and he'll
off.
Be like, "You're a fucking terrible singer." It's like, well, if you got used to it and I actually understood why they're doing what they're doing, you know, you'd probably.
Yeah.
That's with everything. Obviously, there's a certain style of music I might say shit because I don't understand it. You know, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget there was one American Idol video. It was like one of the audition ones, and of course they brought this kid on because, you know, it was funny, and, you know, he did screaming. He did Smash Into Pieces by Silverstein, and it really wasn't that bad. Like, it was pretty good, but of course the judges just fucking wrote him off like, like that. I'm like, but it was actually not bad.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's American Idol, not, like, American artist, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like they're looking for an icon. They're looking for the next Kelly Clarkson, which for the life of me, I can't understand why the fuck she's still relevant.
She's like not even relevant.
She's really clinging. She's trying to cling to it. She wound up just screaming on all of her records, too. So why the fuck don't you people like Dying Fetus? I don't understand.
Dying Fetus. Another video you got to check out is when Dream Theater lost Mike Portnoy. They did a mashup like how they did with James LaBrie, but with Lars trying out, and they're like interviewing him.
God.
We are really impressed.
I did see that.
Dude, that video is hysterical. Cause I'm like sitting here thinking it's real. Like at a moment, like this can't be possible. Like there's no way James LaBrie can play Dream Theater songs. not James LaBrie. There's no way that Lars could play Dream Theater songs. There's no way. And they're like, oh, he did very well. I'm like,
the kick pedal
now. Yeah. They're like, oh, he did very well. I'm like, this can't be happening. And then I'm like, all right, it's fake. I get it. I'm like, dude, if he did very well, sign me up. I'll fucking play Dream Theater.
Yeah, shit.
But God, it's all about getting those drums to be metallic as fuck. Yeah. That's basically what Lars is. Just if we go back
I'm
to the same,
I'm so mad, dude. Because Saint Anger would have been such a tight album if that had never happened.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But and dude, my problem with him is like, it's just like it's not like back in the day. All right, Lars was maybe that like iconic drummer, but nowadays, like, yeah, maybe he's old, but. Dude, you have, like, fucking, like, they're probably in their 50s. I don't know. I don't really pay that much attention to Metallica.
Yeah, something
but
like that.
You have guitar players in their 50, like, shredding sometimes and, like, chugging and playing some pretty, you know, semi-maybe technical
Look
shit.
Look at Slayer. Slayer's
not
a perfect example.
Yeah, but not as much as they used to. But then you hear fucking Lars in every song just doing, like the twos and fours. And just playing, like, exactly. It's like, dude, I need to fucking play this for this band because I'm like, not that I want to make it like crazy technical like Dream Theater, but it's like, dude, this is fucking metal. Stop playing like,
yeah.
And like, I just don't understand how like Kirk Hammett could be okay with that like style of drumming. It's like you're in like that fucking iconic.
Lars basically started Metallica. Yeah. Is the only reason that because he came up with the name too. Well, he didn't come up with it. It was something like somebody he knew was going to start a magazine and call it Encyclopedia Metallica. Like, he was between two names. So Lars convinced him to use the other name, and then he took Metallica as the name of the band.
Yeah, I think I read that.
Because he's fucking Lars.
Yeah,
Lars.
Of course I took Metallica. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that
man.
Fucking dumb voice.
And
still
And it's
does.
So funny. They're all like, oh, he's such a good businessman. I'm like, I can't see it, man. Like, he just seems like too much of like a crazy airhead, you know?
Yeah.
But I couldn't talk to the guy because he looks like he's always chewing something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'll take it back, though, a little bit. He does seem like a very, like, brilliant guy. He just seems like someone that's, you know, when you talk to someone who's very brilliant, but they're just way too paranoid, he kind of, like, reminds me in a sense like that, you know?
Yeah, like a way toned down version of Pink, like the character Pink from The Wall. Like, if you just made him, like, instead of just insane, he just really likes tennis. I bought a poster when I was on my Saint Anger kick because I would ignore the drums. But like Unnamed Feeling, it's so tight. Like I was reading a book about vampires by S.E. Hinton, which like she wrote The Outsiders and then tried to write a vampire novel, which is really just a weird concept in itself. Yeah. But I would read that and listen to Saint Anger, and like they worked really well together. Like it was just one of those great coincidental, like complementary pieces to just like throw into your life at one time. So I bought a Metallica poster because I was just really hyped on him, and I guess I didn't look at it closely enough because it's literally just like the worst local band picture ever, but they're all grown men and millionaires. James Hetfield is wearing his, like the Sacred Heart of Jesus is just, that's all there is on his t-shirt.
What?
And then his cowboy belt and then boot cut jeans with sneakers.
Oh Jesus.
Lars Ulrich is wearing a plain gray t-shirt and then Adidas track pants and tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm. Was this a fucking corn photo shoot?
Like
I know, right?
Like it looks like the dad band that's playing the bar around the corner. And like
hey guys,
they
we're
even
here to play
midlife
some
crisis Rob. Like they put Rob in a polo.
Oh my
sorry,
god.
You're bringing up. I couldn't hear you at all.
Mr. Suicidal Tendencies in a fucking polo.
In a polo and baggy jeans. I think they were really just trying to capitalize on the ethnic part while they could have, because I feel like Lars definitely would be like, oh, well, we could branch out to a new market. He was in Suicidal Tendencies. They the people
yeah,
were
it's
actually
a, it's a new market,
into
man.
Into
yeah,
metal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, nah, it's like, you know, and then just like, you know, do you guys ever hear of a kick pedal? The new album was the first time I ever heard him use a kick pedal effectively. I was rather impressed.
What, like double pedal, the newest one?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I heard that. I'm like, holy shit, Lars is playing double bass again? Like, did he start practicing
or something? I was like,
yeah,
either he got a really great double bass pedal or that studio is armed with some really tight triggers.
Yeah, but then if you hear, like, I think it's Moth to the Flame. There's totally, like, a mistake. Like, one of the hits isn't as on time. And I'm just like, this is fucking Metallica. Like, I shouldn't be hearing mistakes in the drums, you know?
especially because you know that they spent more time in post-production than they did actual production.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And, like, this is a band, too. Like, Kill 'Em All, instead of playing at 450 hertz, they played at 445. That way nobody could play along to the record and make it sound right. Like, they did. They intentionally tuned slightly wrong, like a fraction of a note, just to fuck with people. But now Lars can't even get his kick drum in time, and you guys have enough money to make sure he does.
They're like, all right, this is the best we're going to do. There's going to have to be this mistake on the album.
Yeah.
We don't have time to re-record it. It's got to be out.
Yeah, and you know Metallica fans will wait for an album. Because what was it, like 10 years between Saint Anger and then Death Magnetic?
No, I think it was like seven, it was a big gap. Wait a second. Saint Anger, I think, was like maybe 03. I think Death Magnetic was 08, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, 08 definitely sounds right for that, actually. I think you're right.
Yeah,
yeah, but you want to know what? That happens, like, nowadays, too. Like, Breaking Benjamin, Evanescence, you know, they go through, like, those breaks. Obviously, Metallica didn't because they're still the same original members, minus, obviously, the bass player, but...
Yeah, you know, Well, Ron McGovney, too, the old-school bass guy.
Yep.
And then Dave Mustaine, he wound up better off, probably. Yeah. I mean, he's just as insane as the rest of them are now, but...
Yeah, I don't know how it is for most bands, but I really think that, like, gap really helps them. You know, it's like, you hear, like, you know, Evanescence, like, they came out with their newest album, and I think, like, it just blew up. It's just, like, people, you know, like, when your fans for years are like, all right, you know, I love Disturbed or whatever, but I'm not going to buy their album. And then it's years, and then all of a sudden they come out with a new album, and you're just like, you're kind of blown away a little bit that they're back and their music is good. All right, you know what? I'm actually going to buy a Disturbed album this year. So it's like, oh, now they had to jump in sales because they've been out of commission for a couple of years, and people are just more excited than when they had a steady stream of music coming out from the band, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It'll rejuvenate it too. If you were definitely one of those, like, you get one great shot at it, and then you don't necessarily fall short, but you don't blow up. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good, like, because it's the experience of getting to buy the record, I think, that helps those bands. Like, Jimmy Eat World, I don't think it's even really been that long since they put a record out, but they put out this new one, and they're everywhere. I'm planning on going and buying a physical copy just because, like, fuck, like, I get to buy a Jimmy Eat World record now. Like, it's 2016. That's so badass. But... Yeah, Metallica are the kings of nostalgia, because I feel like they've been skating by on a lot of the same old tricks, but they keep, like, kicking ass, though. I leave it all to Kirk. It's all Kirk and Rob now. Mm-hmm. I feel like the power dynamic has switched.
Well, that's the thing. I think I read an article on, I want to say Loudwire, was it, where they were talking with Kirk Hammett, and Kirk basically said that, you know, he was frustrated with how the record came out, because usually, like, every other record, it was basically James, Kirk, and Lars. And James and Lars basically got into, like, a little groove on this album and basically said, all right, Kirk, we got it from here. Just come up with your dumb solos. We're good.
Your dumb solos.
Yeah, I think that's basically...
That doesn't surprise me at all.
No, but the thing is, like, this is a hell of a lot better than what Death Magnetic was. This was a hell of a lot better than what Saint Anger was. So was Kirk really the issue?
I feel like,
I don't
honestly,
know. I thought Death Magnetic was a good album. Some of the new songs sound, you know, people are like, oh, this sounds like new Metallica. And I'm like, I don't know how you don't hear it, but this sounds exactly like their previous album, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I think the thing is, sorry, what?
No, I forget the track. One of the first, like, the first track or something off Death Magnetic, it sounds almost the same. Like, you could put this song off that album, you wouldn't notice.
Oh, All Nightmare Long. I forget what the new track is, but it was All Nightmare Long. Yeah, no, I know what you, exactly yeah. The same. Exactly the same. I think that the thing is, like, they finally, like, they got away from Bob Rock long enough to, like, be not annoying.
Oh, that was
studio.
Just her life. That was just your life. That song sounds like Moth to the Flame. Like, this, the riff, it's just like a copycat.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, they're riff monsters, but they've kind of, like, wrote every riff they could have at this point, I feel like.
And now they're
like,
just playing,
like...
There's
only so much,
like,
you can do.
Yeah, now they're... Yeah, and if you hear, like, now they're, like... They're just playing, like, groovy, you know, riffs. They're not trying to do anything crazy, but... And it's just, I don't know. I could definitely hear people, like, listening to the new Metallica and just being like, come on, this is Metallica. I've heard this before, like from many other bands.
They should just go in a. They should definitely just go in a Mr. Bungle direction. I think that that'll throw everyone, and then they'll be the greatest band on earth again.
But I do agree with them, though, in a sense that they're like, if Death Magnetic was put out under a different band's name, everyone would love it. But since it's Metallica, people freak out.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that.
Saint Anger too.
Yeah, I could see that. Like if Machine Head put out those two albums.
Than an emo album. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. If it was Rob Flynn instead of James Hetfield, everyone would be, oh my God, this is revolutionary.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Metallica, so they're like, give me fuel, give me fire, give me da 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 da.
Yeah, and don't you love how that song is like the most produced out of any like of the new Metallica songs? Like you listen to that song and then you listen to like the drums off Death Magnetic and you're like, how did they go down in quality? Like it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it was probably when they moved from their $1 million houses to their $30 million houses, they probably just left some of it in the basement.
Yeah.
They left the quality there.
Or they're like, you know what? Music isn't the same as it used to. We really got to dumb down the quality to make as much money as we can.
That's true.
Yeah, no, that would make sense.
I feel like because
how much they lost a lot of money. They planned that festival and it went to shit, right? Orion Fest fell through 1 year.
I just feel like with the way people talk about like Lars and Metallica and that like they don't want people downloading their stuff and like they care so much like on that business side of it. I feel like they would do something like that, you know? Like, we're going to dumb down the quality just to save cost and make a little extra more money, you know?
I feel like it's definitely either that or, like, your grandma just got her first iPhone. Like, she's trying to figure it out. That's what they're doing with all of this, like, 2016 studio software. Mm-hmm. They're just like, shit, I don't know what. All right, I guess that sounds right. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool, let's just do it and say that we know how to studio.
Or it could just be, like, we can't go to that new sounding polished rock. We have to stay the typical Metallica where there's mistakes.
That's still gritty thrash.
Yeah, that's like it's still old, like an old style. It can't be that new polished Azalea Dying feel.
But like that, like Load and Reload, like you're straight up, like if that came out now, it would just be butt rock. Like no one would take that. They'd be touring with like 3 Days Grace.
Yeah.
And like the bands that people are like, oh, these bands are cool, but like I don't give a shit overall about them.
Yeah.
Like, but those albums, they came out at the right time, I guess. But, like, I feel like Metallica is trying, like, to get back to metal when they left it behind. Mm. But I think they're transitioning back towards it, at least with the new album, it sounds like it, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, time will tell, obviously, but, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, I need to know now.
Damn you. You know what's funny? We've been talking for basically 45 minutes now, and we briefly mentioned the two bands you were in.
Sorry, everyone, that we went off on a huge ass fucking tangent.
But that's the beauty of our shows. Yeah. We love the tangents.
The best part, like, I'm not even in a metal band, but I still, like, I can bullshit. Like, you were bringing up suppressed memories about Metallica. I didn't even know I still had. This
all
is
that
tight.
Fuel and hatred is just coming out.
There you go.
Fuck.
So, anyways.
Band I was in was a metal band. The only reason that I'm in, like, I'm doing shit now is because of metal.
Really? Wow.
And I like to think I brought that attitude into it at least a little bit, like with how I approach it at least. Like Chasing Down Sunset, how I wound up in that band is a story and a half. I started Ernston. I was playing in a bunch of bands since like the first band I started, I was in eighth grade. I was playing bass and we called ourselves a technical death metal band called Transcendentalist, and we never did shit. We just had a MySpace page and thought that's all it took to be a band, and
yeah, more
we
or
owned
less
instruments because
yes.
It was eighth grade. And and then I was in a hardcore band that I don't even want to speak about by name because it was terrible.
Oh no, what's the name? You can't fucking tease us. What's the
name? First, it was called Born Dead Buried Alive with a colon, like exactly ripped from what band was it? Oh, it was some band that the bassist really liked. And, Born Dead, Buried Alive. The Agonist. The Agonist.
Yeah, I like that band.
Okay, yeah.
Who they traded
singers with Arch Enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hysterical. Like, oh, we'll take whatever.
We're going to do a trade here, all right? We good with the commissioner? Okay,
the
yeah.
The heavy
we're
metal
trading.
Draft.
Yeah. You have to approve this. You got 2 days before
that
it hits waivers.
Yeah, no, and then every time a new band starts, it's like an expansion team, and all the bands need to be open to at least losing one member. You can only protect three.
All right, she's my keeper.
But yeah, that evolved. That evolved into just another really bad hardcore band called Set the Standard. Actually, no, we had some
That's
decent
not a bad
songs
name.
There because we got a guitarist. It's a cool name, but like as I would talk to people too, like I know at least four other people who have been in a band called Set the Standard when they were 15, which is just hilarious. And then through that band, I met, at a battle of the bands, there was this band called Stereotypical who are really cool pop punk. And I've been doing musical theater since I was 8. Like I had never really thought of singing in a band. I never like put the two together. I was like, yeah, singing, I do that in theater and then screaming and shit. That's what I do in my bands.
Yeah.
And then I saw them and like we broed down, Kevin Smart was their drummer's name. We're still tight now. He's in the Stolen now. But we became friends. Me and him would hang out and just talk about like Queen and shit. We played Hacky Sack in his basement and just talked about Bohemian Rhapsody for like 2 hours once, which is such a like an 80s statement. But and then they kicked their singer out and he messaged me on Facebook. He's like, yo, dude, you can sing, right? And I like thought about it for a second. Like I was like, I don't know, can I do that in a band? How does that work? And then I just said, yeah. And then I joined the band and then was playing with them. And that was the first time I was in a pop punk band. And I was like, I'm never screaming in a band again.
You found your calling.
I mean, my calling gets weirder and more ridiculous every day because I just start thinking too much. And I'm like, oh, I can do this. And that's why I'm in bands instead of a solo project, because everyone will be like, Jimmy, you need to calm the fuck down, dude. It doesn't make any sense. Like, that's not even, like, you think you sound innovative, but that's just literally retarded. And I'm like, oh, okay, sorry.
So Kanye West's
new
album.
Okay, you guys are right. Yeah, no, I would be so beyond Jesus if I didn't have people who knew what they were doing with me. But yeah, Ernst & we did this really cool short 4-track EP. I was, like, a raging alcoholic in high school, like, starting, like, junior year.
Jesus.
Which is really shitty, but it's cool. Yeah, I'm sober. What's the date? I'm 9 months sober in 11 days.
Wow, man.
Which is crazy.
And
yeah.
It was that big of a problem?
Yeah, it was bad. It cost me a lot of stuff personally and, you know, just in general. Like, you know, it kind of sucks. Like, you can tell your parents change how they look at you because, like, when they come to wake you up in the morning, it's not just like, okay, got to get him ready for school. It's like, oh, shit, like, what am I going to find him there? Like, yeah, it was a pretty shitty thing. It all started, like, I got into metal bands because I didn't suffer, like, a severe trauma. I think it's just kind of, like, as a person, I was really weak, and I didn't want to deal with things. So I kind of just would always try to find different ways to ignore it. And then I just kind of, like, built up this character for myself and then would drink to ignore the fact that I wasn't being who I was. But that carried on for, like, 3 or 4 years until this March. But yeah, that first EP is all about, like, that was the first time that I had been honest and open about anything at all. Like, singing about how, like I was explaining how I feel to myself writing those songs. Because I really had no idea. I was, like, so wrapped up in just being, like, half drunk and half asleep at all times. Like, and just not, like, it's not like I didn't have friends because nobody wanted to be my friends. It's just I didn't give anyone a reason to want to spend time with me.
Yeah.
And, so, like, I kind of would retreat to myself and just, like, write shit and just try to come up with, like, fun, witty little, like, phrases to throw in here and there. And then, like, reading it back, I'd be like, oh, wow, okay, I guess, like, that's what I feel. And, like, I understood myself. So, like, Ernst's kind of like my therapy diary band. And somehow it got real, like, in our town, at least, people really liked it. Like, we would be playing a bar, like, 2 blocks behind my house. We would pack, like, 80 kids in there. And it just blew my mind. I'm like, I'm just singing these songs about how I don't know what the fuck's going on with myself at all and how I kind of want to die. And these people are happy about it. That's
like,
weird.
Song's
but
awesome.
I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah. And then we played a show with Chasing Down Sunset and they had one release out at the time. And I was like, I love everything about this band except their singer. And then like a month later, he was out of the band. And so I was just like, yo, what's good, guys? you guys want a singer? And they were like, fuck yeah, dude. And then we put out a record like 2 months later and then went on tour at the same, like, that all happened really fast. It was, I joined Chasing Down Sunset like 2 months before I got sober, and they kind of like pushed me to want to be a good person, just because like they're like some of the most competent and incredible musicians and individuals that I've ever had the pleasure of knowing, let alone working with. And they're younger than me, like considerably. And I was like, I can't just come around these kids with my shit and just be like, you know, reeking of malt liquor and disillusionment at all times.
Oh, of course,
yeah. And just ruin these kids' lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I realized, about, like, a month into being there, I was like, there's no reason for me to have beer stocked in this girl's garage's refrigerator. That is absolutely insane, because they are 16 years old, and you're being ridiculous. And then, yeah, three months after I joined, I got sober. And I've stuck to it, thankfully. And that tour, it was awesome. Like, the tour is really introspective, I think, because even though, like, I was in a van with some of the best friends that I've ever had at, like, and we're going all these places and playing shows and meeting all these people, but it's still, there's the element of just being alone, because you're entering a new world, and it's not like you pause the one at home. You know what I mean? We were only gone for like 10 days, but there's so much shit you miss. And like, the only thing you have, like, is kind of like your brain. So I was just thinking about myself a lot, and I was like, okay, I definitely need to do an Ernst & record, because I'm in such a different place now where I have all of these opinions and just like all these views on everything. And just, I think so much and I feel so much, and like, I can finally say things about something other than myself. And like, I can finally make a record where I'll put my voice on it and it won't just be sad or just like, why is this on an album? Like, dude, just keep this to yourself. Like, I can write things that people will relate to, even if they haven't been in really shitty circumstances. I think I just focus too hard on showing how bad you can get, which is kind of lame, and I know that now. So the new record is just like, I'm writing a lot of weird stuff. Like, it's straight up like Harvey Danger meets Weezer and Say Anything.
Oh, wow.
But like, way more cynical in a way. Like, I don't know. I like to look at songwriting in a much different way now. Like Chasing Down Sunset, we had on our EP that we put out this July, A Proper Introduction. The closing track was Positivity in Transit, which was an acoustic song. Me and Jill wrote it with our producer Rob Sharapa, and I had the lyrics written. It was supposed to be an Ernston song, because it was literally like, just, I tried to write a song to just say how sad I felt. But then, and like, so this song was originally written like 2014. And then I was looking at it and I was like, this is actually like really cathartic. Like, just looking at the way it's written, and I can have somebody else's voice on it singing with me, I could make this a really cool track about like how I'm finally leaving that whole chapter of bullshit behind and moving on to become like a real human being instead of just, you know, whatever it was that I was. And so that song went out, and I like to think that that's where I can finally stop. Like, that's the end of me writing about where I was then and just, like, the whole problem that I had with my addiction. I don't even want to call it an addiction, because it was really just self-centered indulgence, I guess.
Well, basically what it is, though.
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's the part about getting sober that I'm kind of mad at myself, like, because I didn't go to treatment or anything. I just kind of woke up one night and, like, I had a breaking point that night where I was totally conscious but couldn't control myself. And I saw a lot of, like, the crazy shit I would do. And apparently, like, that's what I did every time I got drunk. Mm-hmm. And none of it was, like, good at all. And I was like, okay, that's enough. And then I just literally went cold turkey from that day, which is, like, half of me is really like, all right, good shit, dude. Like, you could do this. You have the willpower of a golden god. And then the other half of me is like, you asshole. Like, why didn't you just do this before? Why did you have to wait so long?
Because you needed that.
It's a really weird thing. Yeah, it's so weird because, like, literally I built a character because I knew I was too weak to deal with life at that point. And then I just let it get so far out of hand that literally, like, Like, I remember my middle school days so vividly. I remember 100% of middle school. I could tell you at least four stories about every teacher I had in middle school, but nothing about high school. Because I feel like I just, like, I shut my brain off so efficiently throughout those years that it didn't take in any new memories. So all I have is, like, from March until now, bits and pieces of high school, and then everything from beforehand. And, like, so I'm, like, trying to rebuild myself because, like, I know who I was in middle school. I know who I was in high school isn't me. And so now I'm just this dude who, like, I feel like I lived two lives that were both very short, and I'm trying to make sense of both of them as where I stand now. And, like, I, like, actually recognize myself in family vacation pictures, which is a weird thing. Like, I didn't realize that I didn't recognize myself. Like, I would look at it and I'd be like, oh, that's my family. But, like, now I look at pictures and I'm like, oh, this is me and them when we went here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a really weird thing. I know it probably doesn't make a lot of sense, and I'm kind of just rambling. No, but I feel like I'm definitely in a really strange, like, it's a cool place, honestly. Like, I'm just, like, finding things that I forgot I knew how to do. Like, I couldn't play guitar for shit. Like, and apparently, like, because I took lessons in middle school and then never again, and then just stopped playing. And then now I can just, like, play guitar. Like, I have most of the Ernston album written, just me and guitar. And, like, I've met with the guys twice, at which beforehand we were building the whole thing. I'd come in with a vocal melody and have to build the song around it. Like, I have, like, an energy and a passion for life that I didn't have before. And, like, the things that I was passionate about before, I can approach more genuinely instead of, like, okay, well, I need to do something. That way, like, you know, if I wind up just finally fucking killing myself tomorrow, like, at least there will be something left behind. Now I can be like, okay, yeah, so, I mean, I guess I just kind of want to give everyone a window into how I'm thinking. And that's definitely a way more healthy place to come from. And I like writing from there because I can make my little commentaries on the stuff I don't like, but I can also focus on making it, like, upbeat and, like, tongue-in-cheek humor and not bring people down while you're talking shit about life. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, more relatably.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah. And for the first time, like, you're actually in control of things because, like, you used alcohol as a crutch, you know, you used it to, like, fuel this, you know, this one character that, you know, you were basically looking at from the outside in, whether you knew it or not. Like, this was, you know, this was your alter ego. This was the cool guy. Like I hate to say it, but it's, like, reminiscent of Fight Club, where, you know, you were watching your Brad Pitt character fucking do everything, and, you know, you just realized that your Edward Norton character yourself was getting all the effects and shit like that, so.
Yeah, yeah, and then at the end, Edward Norton, well, no, he died, but, like, if he lived, imagine him trying to piece shit back.
You ruined it for me.
Yeah, fuck, you just spoiled a movie everyone knows! Well, then again, we are already breaking rule number one, so it's all right.
Yeah.
We're talking about
Fight Club, yes.
Like, actually, it all started, fourth grade was the first time I went to a funeral, and it was also the first time that I read The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. Mm-hmm. And I, between fourth grade and eighth grade, I lost track at 58 times that I read that book.
Jesus.
And, it's an absurd thing. Like, I shouldn't have read 58 books between fourth and eighth grade, let alone one book 58 times. But I really clung to Dallas Winston because he was tough and he was everything that I knew I wasn't. And, like, I did a lot of weird shit. Like, I played hockey all the time. Like, I was in street leagues and I would just start fights and, like, everything I could to just, like, be tough. But, like, I feel it was me trying to prove it to myself. And subconsciously I knew it because, like, I at that point I wasn't fucking self-medicating with anything. I was just trying to do something. And that's why I stuck to acting so much, too, is you get to step in and be someone else and, like, I'm on stage and I'm going to come off and they're going to praise me, even though what they just watched was not me at all. That was somebody that someone else made up.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of comfort in that because I could get by on my own accolades without having to be me. And like, you do, like, it was insane. Like, I literally just wore denim all the time. Like, even like as until now, once I got sober, I actually got rid of all of my denim vests and jackets. I don't wear them anymore because it's, like, my uniform for being a shithead. But, like, I really, like, I took Dallas and ran with him. And then in February of 2015, I played Dallas in a stage production of The Outsiders. And that, like, oh, my God, that kicked it into super high gear. Because then I was just like, oh, you're just method acting, bro. Like, it's all good, dude. Just do whatever the fuck you want. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm just going to ruin everything now because I am Dallas Winston. But now I'm Jimmy. Like, I'm James Fasulo. I'm Jimmy again, like, for the first time, genuinely, since probably, like, my freshman year of high school. And it's really weird. But I have this really cool toolbox, I feel like, where I have the shit I learned where I was doing bad shit with bad people and, like, the experiences that I put myself through then. But then I also have, like, I feel like I've been granted this really unique perspective on life where I could feel like I can look back at two quote-unquote past lives and know that they're behind me while I'm building a new one and figuring out, like, what I'm going to be in my life and, like, who I am or how I feel and what I love. And I wrote, it comes through a lot on the songs. It's not so much, like, it's not me just singing about alcohol or being depressed. Like, I wrote a song that's literally, it's like a doo-wop song. Like the bum, 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 bum. And it's entirely about how I can't write love songs. But, and, like, I'm angry at myself, but music is so much fun now because I can play with it and, like I can make it myself more because I know a little bit more about myself. And that's a lot what the new Ernston project has been shaping up to be. Because Ernston was started by me and my friend Errol Butel in December of 2014, freshman year of college for us. And what essentially had happened was he played in a whole bunch of, like, hair metal bands and, like, dad rock stuff. He went to a Catholic school up until high school, and I was, like, the shitty public high school kid that you do not want your Catholic school son to meet. Because of who I was then. And, like, I would just, like, fuck with him. But then we became friends. And he wrote in my yearbook, you know, his door's always open. You never know when our musical paths could cross. And one night I was just, like, really bummed out because I wasn't in a band at the time. And I was just looking through my yearbook, like, okay, well, one of these people has got to be doing worse than I am. And then I found what Errol wrote. And then the next day I saw him in the cafeteria at Middlesex County College, and he was just sitting there with his headphones in, and I was like, yo, egg roll, and he was like, what's up, and I was like, you want to start a fucking band, dude, and he said, yeah, and then here we are 2 years late, 2 years and, like, five songs later, which is pretty ridiculous, but, yeah, and we're finally doing it, and, like, I'm giving it the chance, and I feel bad for, I put a lot of energy into Chasing Down Sunset, because it all really happened really quickly, but Ernston really fell on the back burner, and a lot of people that were involved felt like I didn't care about it anymore. But Ernston is my baby, you know what I mean? Like, that album is the first time that I ever knew something about myself. Writing that and singing it, like, I learned who I was a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now, like, Ernston's going to be where I continue to do that. Chasing Down Sunset, I love that band. I love those kids. I love our music. But I'm never going to be able to put as much of myself into a song there, I feel like.
So it sounds like you're doing the same thing again when you were an alcoholic. Basically, Ernston is your project while Chasing Down Sunset is, like, the person that, you know, you're watching, more or less.
I mean, yeah, in a weird sense, I guess so, yeah. It's like Chasing Down Sunset, Copper Pulse and Positivity and Transit are the two songs on that album that I wrote the lyrics entirely. And, Positivity, I put a lot, that's, like, I already talked about, like, it's, that's a me song. That's an old Ernston song that never happened. And then Copper Pulse is just written about, like, it's an amalgamation of girls that I knew, and I just put it into one song. But, like, I feel like with Chasing Down Sunset, I'm always trying to make sure that it's not too honest or too brash, or, like, I can never let it be too something, because, you know, that band, Jill is the creative mind behind that band. Like, I'm never gonna front and be like, yeah, Jimmy Fasulo, fucking artist extraordinaire, writing all this great shit. Like, Jill is, it's her brainchild, and I feel like my character in that band is to help and to sing the shit out of the lead parts that she writes for me. I feel like that, to an extent, I feel like I am playing, like, in her show. Not in the, well, that sounded really shitty, but you know what, I meant theatrical sense. Like, she's producing this really fantastic show, and I just get to be a part of it, and I get to contribute in the process, and I'm really grateful for it. But Ernston, I have way more freedom to just do, you know what I mean? Like, I get to put tidbits of me here and there in Chasing Down Sunset. But, you know, our number one single that we had, well, not it wasn't a number one single, but you know what I mean. It was a single off both EPs she wrote when she was 14, which is incredible. But, like, that's what's carrying the band at this point. You know what I mean? A song she wrote 2 years ago. The two songs I wrote are gaining traction in the fan base that we've managed to garner. But, like, it's not Jimmy. Like, I am pretty much synonymous with Ernston for people who, like, are interested in it and, like, have paid attention to Ernston. Like, it's pretty much, like, everyone will be like, oh, yeah, that's Jimmy. Like, Jimmy's songs. And then Chasing Down Sunset is like, oh, Jimmy, the band Jimmy's in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's a cool thing to have. I get to experience both sides of it, being the, like, singer-songwriter aspect. And then also treating the voice as an instrument and applying it to pieces that already exist in Chasing Down Sunset.
Yeah, I hear you there. Jesus Christ. Wow. Yeah, it felt like
I just unloaded so much shit.
It felt like a fucking workout. I'm not going to lie to you. But, you know, it feels good to have done it. It feels good to, like, get your side of things.
Yeah, you said you wanted to do you want an inside look, man. You're behind every barricade, my dude.
Seriously, man. So, anyways, let's throw out some plugs in there. What are you currently working on now? Is it Ernston or Chasing Down Sunset?
Ernston, Chasing Down Sunset, we have a single written. We're figuring out what we're going to do with it. We're actually going on a short tour in February with Color Show from Pittsburgh and the Sulls from Connecticut. We're going to be hitting, I don't know if the whole thing's booked yet. We're hitting Sherman Showcase in East Stroudsburg. I think the Space in Connecticut, Hard Rock Cafe in Pittsburgh, and then either a Jersey or Philly date somewhere also, which is cool because they're all in high school. So I have the time to work on Ernston now. And that's just a 3-day weekend that we're filling up with stuff. And then right now I'm really focusing. Like, I literally turned my amp off just like so I could call you. I've been demoing in my basement for the Ernston album, like 24/7 when I'm not at work. I'm really excited about it. We have a working title that we haven't announced. BTB exclusive.
Oh, shit.
Potential Ernston title that Jared hates, so we probably won't keep it. But Swivel Dried Beats.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll explain my rationale behind it if you want, because it means nothing but everything at the same time. Like sun-dried, like, you know, like sun-dried tomatoes, like Swivel Dried Beats. Because I wrote them all in my computer chair, which swivels.
Okay, I get it now, yeah.
Dried, as in I don't drink anymore.
Yep.
And then beets is just a pun because you dry vegetables and then beets is also music. Honestly a terrible title, and we will change it most likely. But
probably.
I like it.
That's all that fucking matters, all right?
Yeah, man, fuck yeah, right on. And we're recording with when we're finally done, we're basically recording the album twice. Well, three times, I guess. For some of the songs, like, I'm recording the shitty demo in my basement, or with my, he's my vocal coach / just, like, mentor, Kai Garner. Me and him write some stuff together, and then I'll bring it to Errol's house, and then we'll produce a full track, like, guitar, drums, bass, all the other instruments. Like, we're doing piano and stuff, and saxophone, things that we never would have thought about before, which is awesome, but we're doing all that, and then when we're finally done and happy with how they sound on Errol's computer, we're going to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, to record with the main man, Ben Roth, who's going to produce the final product for us. And then we're looking to tour with our friends in Map of Rome, probably in August, and then a little some more in between here and there. I'm really excited for it. Oh, we're going to do soon we're releasing an anniversary cassette of our first EP. Because we never actually pressed it, because it's just like basement demos, essentially.
Yeah.
We're pressing it to cassette, and then on the B side, I have a recording of me and Errol playing it acoustically, the first time that we ever performed it at an open mic night, just on a whim, and a couple other songs. There's a song that I wrote with Matt, who is the singer and songwriter of Map of Rome. We wrote it together. That's probably going to end up on the other side and some maybe some other stuff. And then that'll just be so we can, you know, like, hey, guys, we're still a band, by the way, since even though it's been like a year since we did anything. We're going to do that, and then we're going to really start pushing on this new one. We want to do, like, full, like, we're going to tour as much as we can on it, because this project, like, I feel like now I'm in a place where I can not bring any negativity to it, and so I wouldn't feel bad asking for effort from the, from Errol and Jared and whoever we get on drums. Like, I feel like it would be extremely selfish for me to be still writing those sad, like, selfish asshole alcoholic songs and then ask them to tour on it and put their energy into it. I feel like we're at a point, and they're all in the same place too, like we're ready to go with it and rock and roll and make it more than the four basement demo band that somehow got a lot of popularity off of it, like around here. Like, we're ready to put the work in and try to earn something, and I'm really looking forward to the process that comes along with that.
Hell yeah, man. So 2017 is going to be one busy-ass year.
Dude, fuck yeah. Like, we're Chasing Down Sunset, we're trying to write a full length. I have no idea when the hell that'll happen, but that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we got our new bassist, Matt. I'm playing bass in his other band now, which is just like, he writes songs on his own, and then we just go play them. We're actually playing, the band's called OK Friends, and December 30th, my first show in that band, we're opening for Deal Casino, which is fucking insane.
Oh, like, wow, yeah.
I'm so hyped on that. Yeah, dude, like, I thought, I did American Idiot over the summer. Last summer, I did the New Jersey premiere of American Idiot in Rahway, and I thought it was tight that they retweeted me, because I was like, yo, at Deal Casino, wearing your t-shirt in every performance of the show, and they were like, tight, and I thought that was awesome, but now, like, I'm playing bass in a little twinkle emo band, and I get to open for them. I don't know, life just keeps getting cooler, like, now that I, like, let it, you know what I mean?
Absolutely,
it's cool.
Hell yeah. So let's.
And you're never busy if you're doing what you love.
That's also true. So let's make sure people know exactly where to find you doing the stuff you love.
Yes.
So you're on Facebook with both bands. So let me just throw that link out there. So for Ernston, it's facebook.com/ErnstonBand. That's ErnSton band. And Chasing Down Sunset is basically facebook.com/ChasingDownSunsetBand. So if you just put the titles in, followed by band, it'll pop up. Music's up on there. You could get it off of Bandcamp as well. I saw a couple of links for that. And I guess for all news, just stick to the Facebook page and definitely check you out when you guys come around here. Come up to North Jersey.
Yeah, for sure.
Hell yeah.
We got Twitter and stuff too. Yeah, but fuck Twitter, dude. 140 characters is lame.
Exactly.
North Jersey. I totally have a thing going on in North Jersey. No, I don't. No, I definitely don't.
Okay, get a thing.
I do love North Jersey, though. I'll get a thing, and then I'll get back to you, and we'll just update this retroactively.
Yep, there we go. So right before I let you go, we'd like to play a song out from the person we interview. Any songs come to mind, whether Ernston or Chasing Down Sunset? Doesn't matter.
I'm thinking Positivity in Transit. I guess that's the one we probably talked about the most. Positivity in Transit from... I'll email you the track, because I don't know if we have it up free anywhere. We're kind of annoying with the accessibility of that album. Positivity in Transit by Chasing Down Sunset would be tight.
Perfect.
For an outro.
Hell yeah. Let's close it out.
Sweet.
Jimmy, thank you so much, man. It's one hell of an interview.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me ruin your night a little bit.
No it problem. Is quite all right. Now we're going to be sad and pathetic.
Hey, man. You can always just be sad, let other things be sad and pathetic to you instead of you feeling sad and pathetic. That's how I get by now.
There we go.
I just take it out on everything else.
There it is. What a way to close things out. Jimmy, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Brad.
All right.
God damn, wow.
I stand behind a cigarette, hoping for a change to come. Been waiting so long, and might have missed the bus to bring it to me. Because my stop's still empty. I hope you love who you think you are.
I can feel your apathy.